Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tanya Mosley.
We are living in a time when science and public education are being attacked on a fundamental level.
Several thousand people gathered on the Boston Common this weekend in support of science and to protest proposed cuts by the Trump administration. Here's Harvard Medical School Dean Dr. George Daly. He says the plan to cut 20% of funding for the National Institutes of Health would have a cataclysmic effect.
These cuts are antithetical to the ideals of our nation. Science is at the heart of an informed electorate and a democratic society.
There wasn't just a big showing here in Boston, but also at rallies throughout the world, which leads us to what happens next. To answer that, we're joined by Harvard professor Naomi Oreskes. She teaches the history of science. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Pleasure to be with you.
So how would you characterize this moment in history for science? Do you feel that it's under attack?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think there's no question that's true here in the United States, not necessarily globally, but here in the United States, for sure.
Specifically to the United States. And can you talk just a little bit about that?
Well, many scientists have become aware of the problem since the election of Donald Trump because of the large cuts to science that he's proposed, as we heard the previous speaker say, and also because he has specifically targeted certain programs like satellite data collection at NOAA that are relevant to issues like climate change, which profoundly affect people's lives. And the fact that he's targeted these climate data-related programs speaks to a political agenda to try to essentially eliminate data that is inconvenient to certain interests, certain political interests and economic interests. So it's very disturbing for scientists, and it's been a kind of wake-up call for the scientific community. But from my perspective as a historian of science, this is the culmination of something that's been going on in the United States, unfortunately, for quite a while, really since the late 1980s or the early, well, actually even earlier, since the 1980s. In my book, Merchants of Doubt, with my colleague Eric Conway, we showed how there's actually been a kind of systematic attack on science related to environmental issues and public health in the United States, pushed by a kind of network or consortium, or network is probably the best word, of interests, mostly commercial but also ideological, who have resisted accepting scientific data that pointed to serious problems that needed government intervention.
So you're saying this goes back several decades?
Yes, and if you push it even further, what we showed in our work was that the strategies and tactics had actually been borrowed from the tobacco industry attack on science related to the harms of tobacco use. So in that sense, this is a story that begins more than 50 years ago, but has reached a kind of alarming crescendo in recent months.
So for many of us who are really learning about this for the first time because of these marches all around the world, have scientists taken a public or activist role like this before?
Not really. I mean, we've seen that sometimes in the past when particular sciences have been under attack, for example, attacks on evolutionary theory here in the United States, scientists in those fields have sometimes become active and taken a public position to try to defend their particular scientific areas or even a particular theory like evolutionary theory. But we haven't seen what we saw this weekend, which is a broad-scale mobilization of scientists across the board speaking up not just to defend a particular area of science like climate science or a particular theory like evolutionary theory, but in fact to defend the entire enterprise of doing science.
One theme that we heard from several people on Saturday was that scientists have to get out of the labs and engage with the public. Can you talk a little bit about why this is important and what that would really look like?
Well, I think it's terrifically important because one of the reasons why attacks on science work is because most people are pretty confused about science. Science can be confusing. My particular area of interest is earth science and particularly climate change, and climate science is complicated. There's no getting around that. So it's easy to confuse people, and it's easy to make people think that the science is unsettled and we don't really know. So that makes it really imperative for scientists to stand up and reach out and say, well, actually, the science is complicated. That part is true, but although it's complicated, there are a lot of things we do know. Many things are complicated. Relativistic physics is complicated. Plate tectonics is complicated. DNA is complicated. And yet, we know a lot about these things. And if we take the time, we can explain them to our fellow citizens in ways that they can understand. And I think that's an urgent task right now, because when people don't understand the science, then it is very easy to create confusion and to create the impression that, well, we don't really know if there's climate change, so, you know, let's just not do anything about it.
Well, this whole act, this whole thing, this march, and really this effort has brought about a lot of tension we're finding in the scientific community. Are you worried that activism might damage the objectivity in research? That's kind of like the talk that many have brought up with folks that were out there covering it over the weekend. I'd love your thoughts on that.
Well, this was exactly what I spoke to at our pre-rally at Harvard on Saturday morning at 9:30 before we all walked together to the Common. I think that that represents a profound misunderstanding of the character of scientific objectivity. And I love science. I love scientists. I used to be one. I'm married to one. I spend most of my time with them. But scientists themselves can be quite ignorant of areas outside of their own research. And many scientists carry rather confused ideas of what it means to be objective as a scientist. So we have, my field is not a super old field, but it's been around for about 100 years. And there is a lot of research and study about what does it mean? What is scientific objectivity anyway? And all of the work that's been done in this area has really come to one conclusion, which is that it's a mistake to think about objectivity as a characteristic that inheres in an individual. So many scientists will say, I am objective. And some scientists will say, and therefore I can't get involved in politics because that would compromise my objectivity. Well, that's just silly, because of course we all have views, and no person can expunge from their brain their values, their views, their orientations,
biases,
their beliefs. That's an impossible task. And it's not even desirable, because we have lots of good neuroscience data that shows that even if we could expunge our feelings, it would actually be a bad thing, because we need feelings and we need views in order to reason in the world. So objectivity is not achieved by suppressing your personal opinions. Objectivity in science is achieved through the social practices of science, the practices of critical scrutiny, of arguments among scientists. Melissa Franklin emphasized this in her talk. It's not an opinion, because it's not just what I say, because I have to now present the data to my colleagues who will argue with me, who will present competing hypotheses. It will have to go through peer review. It will have to be tested. And the strength of science and the objectivity of science comes not from the attitude that I bring to my work as an individual, but comes from this collective process of critical scrutiny that I am part of.
So what's the next step beyond these rallies and beyond the discussion?
You know, I'm not a political organizer, even though climate deniers will accuse me of that. I am a scholar and an academic, and I write books and articles, and I study things, and I try to understand them. But I think the most important thing that's happening now is for scientists to grapple with the fact that we are in a political situation, that science is involved with society. And in that sense, it has to be at least to some extent political. And the idea that science could exist in a vacuum, it's not that, again, history refutes that notion. Scientists have always had to grapple with, how do we explain what we do to people? How do we make the case for why other people should support what we do? Scientists have always needed patrons. And in America, in the 21st century, our patrons are the American people. It's the American taxpayers. So we have to make the case to our patrons for why what we do is valuable, why it improves their lives, and why they should support it.
Naomi Oreskes is the professor of history of science at Harvard University. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.